I'm speaking today with Councilmember Pam Holm, who is a candidate for city controller this November. Councilmember, first question I'd like to ask is, why are you running for this office?
Thank you. I'm running primarily, Charles, totally, Charles, because I believe that our city, as great as it is, has a lot of challenges. I've loved my time, and I think it's been really effective as a district council member, and this is a really continuity step and a step to really help build and address some of the issues that our city faces. I care, like all citizens do, about today. I really, really care about tomorrow, when no one remembers Mayor Bill White's name, when no one remembers Pam Holm or Charles Kuffner or anyone else, but what they do know is that they live in a really great city.
What would you say were your top three achievements as a city council member, you know, having now served two-plus terms?
Yeah. As a city council member, I think there's quite a few things, so I'll say what I think it is, and then you can prioritize them, but I'll prioritize them. The one thing I will tell you from the citizens that have been impacted by it, the facilitation of the first quiet zone in probably the state of Texas has been, without a doubt, the most changing from a quality of life standpoint. Even those people that believe that the train horns didn't bother them have said, oh, I never knew what it was like to have a full night's sleep. So, and what I'm most proud about that is not only that we were the first, but more importantly, the private-public partnership that it was. It was community-driven, initiated, and then we worked together for a positive outcome. The same is true of two libraries that are unlike any others that the city has done. When we came into office, Luskin Library was at a point that there was much consideration of even moving it, closing it and moving it, because it was small. It was, for many years, one of the biggest and busiest libraries. It's the library I went to when I was growing up. And we worked with the community once again. The community raised $1 million in 6 weeks to buy the adjoining land, and then we worked as a partnership to put that library in place of one that has... There was no proposal. It was not on the CIP anywhere, and yet it didn't have operational restrooms. The books, it had a failing system of books because the roof leaked so much that when it rained, it destroyed the books, so the books were just going off the shelves. So it has been such a positive outcome. And the other thing that it does is it served it's the first time that we looked at a multitude of service, because in this area, we don't have any community areas. So it also has some community meeting rooms and gathering spots, and it has become a real integral part, which I think is so important in our city, is that we have these integral parts of libraries and parks and community centers that draws and holds. It's much like our schools and churches and those strong points that hold our community together. The second one is Kindle. When I came into office, Kindle had been on the CIP. It had been pushed about 4 years. The plan was to rebuild it where it was and work with Spring Branch on a site that even then was going to be too small. We worked with the community again. We worked with our Parks Department, and we rescued some surplus land, almost 3 acres. And now what is going to open in December, it's the first time ever, what is going to open is a brand new Kindle library, which is predicted to be, once again, the busiest library, branch library, in the city of Houston. And it will open in December as a library, as a community center, as a trailhead to Terry Hershey Trail, and as a park. And that is pretty phenomenal.
Okay. What would you say are your top priorities for controller?
Without question, right now we live in a great city, but we've got some very significant challenges. And the controller has so much potential in affecting those policies. First thing that is pretty clear to me is that the citizens of Houston, who are our funding body, you know, we're not like a business. Every penny that the city spends comes from somebody. And so the first thing we will do is we will put all those records and all our expenditures online so that people who are interested in how their money is being spent will see it. Another thing that is really important is, and another role of the controller is the investment portion of it, of which we have an incredible investment team. Right now we've got, in July 08, we had $2.4 billion under investment. In July 2009, we had $2.3 billion invested. That's a pretty good return, but it's oversight and management of that body. And then the most significant is establishing and helping us with the processes of the city. Efficiency, coordination, those are the things that I have found for 6 years. We all, it's a goal, but we have all failed to have that and achieve that goal. And I think through performance audits, through financial audits, through the processes of bringing resources once you have the capacity, and once you've figured out what needs to be done, not for it to be threatening to any staff or departments, but to be able to have the resources in order to implement the recommendations made through the audit. And I think if we have that, it will be really significant in changing and altering what's going on. I don't know if you're following, but much of the concern today is, for me, the greatest goal our city has, I think we're so phenomenal, because we are so different from any other city. We encourage, we want, and our success, I think our future success, is based on the coexistence of neighborhoods and urban communities, or neighborhoods and commercial communities. Learning to coexist in mixed-use environments is what is going to be, I think, vital for our success in the future. The only thing that is absolutely protected in my mind is a deed-restricted neighborhood. And so that's my overall goal of where you bring all these efficiencies into place and all these policies in order to set it, is to make sure that the city, as a service provider representing the citizens, is able to encourage, help, assist, enable deed-restricted neighborhoods to maintain those deed restrictions and the integrity of the neighborhoods as they were planned and intended to be. The other thing is to set processes and policies that allow development, that encourage development, that encourage the coexistence of this mixed use. And right now, for me, probably the most frustrating thing is the capacity for or the ability to assist people in doing it. I think most of the time, my perception is that we are based on a case-by-case management system, and it's not consistent, it's not predictable, and it sets communities, rather than helping us to coexist, often it sets them almost at war with each other. And I think that it is imperative for us to work in order to help people understand that every perspective is important, that everybody has a seat at the table, and then the outcome is balanced. I believe this in everything I do, but primarily in the city, when we're supposed to be working for our citizens, that if there is a significant winner or a definable loser, then the citizens of Houston have ultimately lost. There's got to be a balanced outcome. It may not be exactly what an individual thinks he wants, but the accountability, the explainability, the predictability, and the inclusiveness have to come from a much more coordinated intent.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the city's current financial situation. I guess let me preface this by noting that you voted against the budget in May. Can you speak a little bit to that?
I voted against it 2 years ago, and then I voted against it this year. I'll be happy to address why I voted against it this year. In September of 2008, when the economy and the world picture changed dramatically and surprisingly for most of us, to the extent to which it was, I started at that point saying that I thought it was really important for the city to address our spending patterns and prioritize our needs, much like I thought every citizen was doing for themselves. And I don't think that growth at that point should have been a goal. And we needed to, in fact, find ways to be more efficient and to cut back on our expenses and prioritize what it was we wanted to deliver. The budget that was presented, the other thing is, after I voted no on the budget in 07, one of the things that, which was the 08, FY 08 budget, one of the things that I suggested to the mayor was that the It has been very frustrating to me as a council member that the budget is created by the administration and it is approved by council. And for us to be, which I do, I spend the full month, everything I can, trying to get information so that I really understand what's being proposed. And it's very frustrating to me that in the waning hours that of the budget preparation, that council gets 30-minute reports from departments and then are solicited for amendments. And it is not my desire or intent to rewrite the administration's budget in those final hours. So the mayor graciously and I think fully agreed with me that we needed to have council members and people have their input on the front end. You know, in order to have any outcome, you either have to address things on the front end or the back end, and I've always been a proponent of being proactive. So I met with the mayor in January. I shared with him my concerns, what I thought we should be doing and some of the things that I thought we should be addressing. The finality of it is I voted against the budget because in order to balance the budget, we were using $51 million of reserve funds. And I think in this period of time, a reserve fund should not be used for recurring operating expenses. And of that, there was still an additional $15 million of savings needed that we had not even identified yet. And it disturbed me that that is the approach we would take and that then the proposal was we'll come back in September and review it. The way I think most of our citizens do it is you cut as much as you can cut and you get down to the core, and then if you find you have additional funds, it's much easier to supplement than to cut. And now we're going through this exact same process. Once again, the departments have gone and we should be implementing processes. They're back reviewing, trying to figure out 1% and 2% more than they can cut. You know, we should have put a base budget where there are no. If there's flexible spending, then for me, that was a problem to start with. But secondly, and most importantly, we have a role, and it was the third year that we had proposed using reserve funds in order to balance the budget. And in this economy, this environment, I don't think it's wise, especially with the challenges we're facing. Not only is the budget a challenge to make it, you know, at this point we do have, as everyone's talking about, pension obligations that have to be reviewed, they have to be addressed, and even more importantly, what concerns me even more is our combined utility system. And no one's even talking about that yet, but you're going to see it, and you're going to hear it shortly.
All right. What's, as you noted, there is right now a dispute between Controller Parker and Mayor Brown over the current state of,
White.
I'm sorry, did I say Brown? Mayor White. I've been doing too many of these. Yes, over the current budget situation with Controller Parker saying there's a $103 million deficit right now and Mayor White saying it's more like $25 million. Can you speak to that? And
I can, and thank you, because here's the whole, the part that's so important. Our goal should not be to question the spend, how we spend numbers, or how we position it. Our goal should be able to inform and provide information to our citizens so they understand. There is only an $11 million estimated difference between what the two are proposing. It's just a matter of how they're looking at it. Mayor White is saying there's an additional 25 because he's counting the 51 is already chalked up and over with. Controller Parker is looking at the overall amount, and she is including the 51 reserve fund. She's including the $15 million that we still have to find in savings, and then in addition to that, she's found the additional number that adds up to 103. If you take the 51 and the 25 and the other numbers that the mayor, he's looking at a figure of, I think it's $93 million. And council and Controller Parker is looking at a number that's $104 million, or $92 million, Ms. Mayor White. Hers total is $103 million. So they're really only talking about $11 million difference, and that comes from estimates of revenues that's coming in and the general $11 million, while it seems really significant to me personally, in a $4 billion budget, they are very close to having the same interpretation of where we are at this period of time.
Now, it seems to me, and you've talked about this, almost everybody I have talked to in talking about the city's finances, the focus is always on expenditures. When these new numbers came out, the first words out of Mayor White's mouth was that we're going to fix this with more cuts. You know, there was no talk of any revenue enhancements. What are we doing on the revenue side? Are we taking in as much money as we should be? Are we taxing at the right level? What should we be looking at to try and find or enhance sources of revenue?
You know, the way you're framing that is in direct opposition of the way that I feel the role of the city is. Our job is not to look for revenues. Our job is to provide core services as efficiently, as effectively as we possibly can. And once you have looked at all of your expenditures, I will tell you one thing that I've been in strong disagreement with. I voted against it a year and a half ago. Is purchasing 13 new helicopters at a time when we are already had identified the crime rates and the public's need, desire for boots on the ground and for those types of implementations. 13 new helicopters is not only a tremendous cost for the equipment, it is an unbelievable cost for maintenance that's required for the operation of it. We did it at a time when gasoline and all the fuel costs were at their highest peak, and the people and the sources that might be pulled from the boots on the ground in order to operate it. That's why I voted against it. I'm not opposed to helicopters. I'm not opposed to anything, but I don't think that we should just find, in this instance, what the newspapers say was that we were replacing 6. I believe in that. I was all for that. But then we were increasing it by 7 so that we'd be ready to do some flyovers, and we happened to have 7 available to us because 2 other cities had canceled their orders. That's not for me. I have real problems with making those kinds of decisions. Yes, I want to seize opportunities, but I don't think that we can just look at single opportunities. I think we ought to have an overall plan and goal of what specifically is our goal. Right now, when it comes to public safety in the terms of police, our goal, the top highest goal, should be what our citizens have asked for over and over. Crime still is their number one concern, and that is for them to have the security to know in an emergency they are going to have someone there to protect them. They are going to have someone there to respond to them. And I think a lot of the community is fearful. And so I think so often what we do is well-intended, but what we do is we try to fix problems with the wrong tools because we haven't really identified the comprehensive goal.
That seems like a lot of the city's big financial obligations going forward are related to things like pensions. There's a police pension, there's a fire pension, there's a city employees pension, but I believe total obligations for that are in the neighborhood of about $2 billion.
That's not even to mention the health benefit issues. That's just straight.
Well, in terms of the city's long-term financial obligations, what is your opinion of where we stand and what needs to be done to make sure that they don't outstrip our ability to pay for them?
Yeah, and then start throwing in the combined utilities also, because our debt service there has risen to a point that you don't have the capacity to issue more bonds in order to do the improvements. That's where you don't want to get. You don't want to be in a situation that you're paying all the debt so that you can't continue to maintain and grow and do the services that you need to do. There is no question, and I want to make this really clear because I probably have been the loudest advocate for reviewing, looking at, and making sure that we are on a course to address the issues we have to address. I think January 1, 2010, no matter who comes into office, there are going to have to be issues and things addressed that I think some of them should have been addressed beforehand, but no matter what, they're going to have to be addressed. And someone needs a whole host of new leaders have to be addressed and ready to address it and make some very tough decisions on behalf of the citizens. That is saying at the same time that there will be a new mayor, there will be a new controller, and at least half of the elected officials in the city of Houston will be new. That is frightening. So we have to have some people that have been actively engaged, that have been a part of it, and that the people know are ready to address some of those issues. What we're going to have to do is, first of all, the city of Houston is a battleship. We will not sink. So, I'm not trying to say the sky is falling or the world's coming to an end or we're not going to make it through. But I do think that we cannot continue to push decisions to the future without, I think it's time to address them, and it's time to make some really, really what I call true belt tightening changes. The pension system in itself, we are not at a place where we can address it right now because we're under meet and confer agreements, particularly with the municipal system, that don't allow us to make those changes. But we've got to be ready, and we've got to know where we're going and how we're going to do it, and it starts January 1. And it's going to be, a lot of it is going to be defining what is that fair and equitable system. In 2002, when a lot of the pension system problems began, it began as a result of trying to utilize a retirement plan in lieu of compensation. The premise was wrong to start with. But it was the premise. It is where we are. Through these years, much of the compensation levels have been much more not only compatible but realistic, and for a public service or for a public government, we have our salaries are consistent and appropriate and continuing to be addressed and rise to the cost of living and to be able to maintain lifestyles that are fair and equitable for all. The pension systems, the overall plans and programs are going to have to be addressed. Not necessarily for people that are now getting it, but for the people coming in the future. Because those are the ones that are paying today, and if we don't address them, Charles, I'm telling you that we won't have a product, we won't have a pension system for those working for us that are coming into the city today in the future. We cannot sustain what we're going to be paying out with what is coming in and the way it's being used at this point. There also has to be, as a sponsoring body, we must, and when I say we, the city must have some responsibility and accountability for the way that the pension is managed, the investments that are made, and how we go about spending and using the money that is being contributed by the city and by our employees. This last week we had the issue over the pension appointment in order to address the budget that was proposed by the municipal pension system. This is one of the areas that concerns me. We knew we had a vacancy 2 months ago. We knew their budget was coming up. We saw the budget about a month and a half ago, and we knew we needed someone at the table. We should have been aggressively, proactively, together, working to fill that position, recognizing what the value is. It turned out fine because as we moved forward, one, we were able to stop it so that the pension board that put the budget forward came back with a much revised budget that lowered expenditures, that actually was a minus 1% of the proposed from last year, and cut all the personnel costs and raises that were out of proportion. It worked out fine, but this is exactly what I'm talking about, where you have to look at your plan. You have to know step by step where you're going. You've got to know what your goal is. Our goal is not just to look good and say we've done something big today. Our goal is to position our employees, and there is nothing more important to the success of the city than the people that are working there. So I am a huge advocate for a strong, for a fair, and for an equitable and sustainable retirement plan for them.
One of the main functions of the Comptroller's Office, of course, is audit.
Yes.
And Comptroller Parker has been doing a number of performance audits. Can you speak to what your opinion of how those have gone and what opportunities you see in the Comptroller's audit function to do more or to do different things to gain efficiencies and savings.
Yes, absolutely. Controller Parker, one of the first things she did coming into office, and I will applaud her, I supported her, and I think it was really good, is that she put into place the ability for the controller to conduct audits, because previously, while the controller could conduct audits, it was all only after the approval of the mayor. And so it gave the controller's office that independency that it needed in order to bring balance, because that's the real role of the controller, is to be the watchdog, to be the balance, and to be able to make recommendations so that the policymakers are equipped with the decisions they need to make good decisions for us. So I applaud that, and she has done many, many audits. Where we're still short is being able to implement the findings. And in my opinion, sometimes while we've done many, many audits, we continue to fail to identify what the real audit need is. We get a little bit sidetracked and maybe getting too detailed with the audit as opposed to really trying to bring change and effectiveness to an audit. Right now, there is... audits are always going to be challenging. You know, it's never going to be one where somebody's going to... I wish it would be, but I'm not sure that it will ever be in any situation where somebody is just waiting with bated breath for somebody to come in. But that's really how it should be in public service. We ought to be able to go in not as a job performance of the people that are working there, but how do we improve the service delivery? What are the tools we need, and how do we equip people that many of them have been long-standing, strong, effective leaders and staff of the city, and what we need to do is equip them with the tools to move into tomorrow. And so one is I will continue to do a lot of audits. I would like to see it more on a regular basis. I'd like the attitude to change so that people are assured that there is not any, that it is not coming in to change employees. If there is a problem with a staffer of how he's working, that is not a performance audit. That is a personnel review that needs to be handled in a totally different way through the human resources and the administration. The other thing that we have the capacity to do in Houston, unlike maybe other cities, I just know because I've been here in Houston all my life, but for 40 years I've been actively engaged in the entire community and know that, like no other city I'm aware of, we have resources in this city. Our leaders of the city are the people that do so much for our city and for themselves and business are willing and able, and Mayor White has proved this, to come in and be a resource to us. And so when an audit is performed, I don't know exactly what you call it, but for now I'm calling it the home team or the home commission, but you bring those resources in that then actually give the departments the capacity to implement some of the recommendations without being threatened by it. In order to change, you've got to understand and you've got to be equipped with the skill set and the tools to do so. And you can call it training, you can call it effective management, you can call it efficiency, but to be able to use the resources of the city and some of our great large and small businesses in order to help the city become more effective, more coordinated, more capable of doing the one thing we want to do, and that is to be able to serve our citizens and the core service delivery.
Now, do you, sort of philosophically, do you see the role of the controller as being like a check on the mayor? I mean, the mayor obviously is a strong office. We have a strong mayor system here. The mayor controls most of the power, to do stuff in Houston. Do you see the role of the controller as being like a check on that power, or do you see the controller being more of a partner with the mayor or something else?
I see the controller as being the independent, strong voice of the people. It is a checks and balances on a system. It's not to be a friend of the mayor. It's not to be a foe of the mayor. It's not to be for the mayor. It's not to be against the mayor. It's an order. It's the checks and balances for the system that allows all of us to serve the goal. The goal is not to threaten the power of anyone. The goal is to empower all of us to be who we're supposed to be for our citizens. That's who the controller is accountable to.
Give me your assessment of Controller Parker's term in office, and how do you think you would be like her or not like her as the next controller?
I think she's been very effective. I think she has done, each controller's style is different. Controller Parker has brought several programs in that has been very successful in helping the city save millions of dollars in our management and our processes. She's also brought some programs in that have offered our citizens the capacity to do banking and to manage some of their financial. I think that she has been she is very well aware of what the situation is. I think that the strong mayor role, you know, Mayor White has been very strong, and which is his prerogative. That's what the mayor of the city is. And so I think that because of the way he has run the city, I think that she maybe hasn't been as vocal in what she's accomplishing. But I think she's been effective in doing so.
Seems to me like a number of people who have held the office of controller have gone on to run for other things, including mayor. Do you have any political ambitions beyond being controller?
I don't. I have been engaged. I'm a native Houstonian. I've never had another residence than here. I have been community involved for over 40 years. I ran for District G because I knew I could make an effective difference in a city I love. I ran then, if you'll recall, saying that after that I'm going to return to the community. And at this point in time, I'm running for one reason, and that's because I know that I've been effective. I know that I am needed at this time, and that I'm the most experienced. I'm the most qualified. I've been engaged on council for 6 years. The only person that has been my only job. I have served on every committee actively. I've participated in every committee, and I've made some effective recommendations and changes. As chair of the pension, we have addressed this. Situations we've got to address, and I'll be there to do it. I'm also the only one, I'm a former school teacher, I'm the only one in this race that's actually worked for a financial company, investment firm. I'm the only one in this race that has managed programs and finances for small businesses and nonprofit organizations. I'm the only one in this race that has a proven track record of being able to deliver and to make some effective changes. I'm very proud of my record on council and my full-time commitment to it. And I think it's one that's needed at this point. But this is, I have no intention. Well, I will tell you, I love to work. I love to serve. I believe that each one of us has a role to play, and I think I have found one for me that I can serve and help citizens, and I'm here to seize this opportunity. I'm thrilled, and I think it's one of the reasons that it's really important that I'm running for this office, is because I will not be compromised in any form of fashion by making a decision that might impact a future decision of a race I'm going to run. I have no intention at this point of moving forward.
All right. Let me just ask you very briefly then, two more questions. One, what should be the top priority of the next mayor?
The top priority of the next mayor, it's bringing our financial, addressing the financial needs of the city and the financial capacity of the city in order to provide those services. And I think that one of the most important and the things we're going to have to address first and foremost is our position financially in order to continue to build our infrastructure, our police force, and our public safety, but additionally our infrastructure, our combined utilities, and our streets and roads.
And when people come to vote in this election on November 3rd, why should they vote for you and not one of your opponents?
I think I just told you, and I'm happy to tell you again, I'm the only one in this race that has been there serving full time. I've got the experience, I've got the background, I've got the information, I've got the knowledge, I've got the energy to make changes. I'm the one that has the financial background. I'm the one that's been there and understands what's going on. I've been a part of watching all the programs, making the effective changes. And without a doubt, I deliver what I say I'm going to do. I am totally committed to being a part of a fabulous future for our city.
All right. Councilmember Pam Holm, thank you very much for talking to me.